All right, hello everybody and happy Sunday evening. again, this is the last Sunday before Christmas. And of course, Jasmine is home and her and I have been working on a project all day. When I told her I had to leave and go teach, I'll go back up and finish with her afterwards. What we're working on is it's crazy because neither one of us are architects. We're trying to design a house. Because Ron is very unhappy with our dirt roads, which right now are pure mud. He wants a house with a four-car garage and a paved road. And so Jazz and I are trying to design one that kind of meets the needs of the family. And it's funny, if you've never done, was it architecture? Is that what that is when you're designing? Yeah, you're like an architect. If you've never done that before, it's hard. we had the software, and we know what size we want the rooms to be, but getting them all to fit together, it's really hard. So I had to run out right in the middle. I was like, well, just do this and I'll come back and we'll continue from there. So that's what we're doing on this Sunday before Christmas, is trying to design a house. So we'll see what happens. We are here for the guiding lights. And we're starting a new section. It's on page 29. It's called The Critical Turning Point. So I'll just begin reading. The unitive state is as far as we can go with the inward journey. Oh, yeah, I remember this. This is really interesting. Once we come to the unitive state, the inward movement comes to an end. It is over, finished. We cannot go beyond the divine or the innermost center of being. We cannot go deeper than the deepest. If we feel there is any deeper movement possible or any greater depth to be realized, we have not yet come to the unitive state. So we all remember that Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is within. We could also say the real world is within. But what she's saying is, once you reach that kingdom of heaven, once you reach that real world, once you reach that unitive state, you have finished the inward journey. She's not saying you finished the spiritual journey. She's just saying you finished the inward journey. You've gone as far as you could go. You could say you've gone all the way through the ego to the divine. She says, the fact that we cannot go beyond the deepest divine center indicates this center marks the deepest vertical boundary of consciousness. Though we know the divine is infinite and without boundaries, in experience, the divine center is actually a boundary that is consciousness. She says, we have to face the truth that consciousness can experience only so much of the divine, simply because it is not divine. It is an error to believe that the unitive or transcendental condition is limitless, or that it has no boundaries. So she's saying it's an error to believe that consciousness has no boundaries. And if we look at the fact that there's another awakening beyond consciousness, you can kind of see how that might be true. Now, there's almost like an edge of consciousness. You back up against that edge, you back up against that edge, and then you kind of fall through the secret trap door into really is limitless, right? So if the limitless is beyond consciousness, then consciousness itself cannot be limitless. Consciousness can experience only so much the divine simply because it is not divine. It is an error to believe that the unitive or transcendental condition is limitless or that it has no boundaries. What remains to be revealed in the unitive state is how far the human limits have been expanded due to the unitive state, and how far man can actually push these limits. Until this state is fully exercised and tested in the ordinary marketplace, which just means everyday life, its limits can never be known. In fact, until we push limits, any limit for that matter, we can never know if limits exist, much less know what they are. I kind of have some comments on that, but I feel guidance to just continue reading before I say anything, so that's what I'm going to do. Apart from the revelation of the deepest divine center and true self, one way we know that the transforming process is over and that the butterfly is complete and ready to fly is that none of its experiences, even its ecstasies, add a jot to its new condition. Thus, all the experiences and practices that were helpful in the transforming process become unnecessary. They bring about no change and take us no deeper than the deepest center. The butterfly that is truly complete knows without doubt or hesitation that he has gone as far in this life as it is possible to go at this time. Hence the definite sense of ending. The question that now arises is how best to live this new life. For the completed butterfly, there will arise the courage and fearlessness to put the past behind and fly into the unknown as the servant of all in order to exercise and test its new life under the most trying circumstances. Here I think of a Buddha saying that once we have reached the other shore, we have no need to carry the raft around with us. The raft, of course, is all the practices, experiences, and even the lifestyle that were part of crossing over from the old to the new life, or from the egoic to the unitive state. These are of no use anymore. They add nothing to the unitive state, and if we cling to them, they may even hold us back. So first thing, again, one of the things I said when I first started this journey into Bernadette Roberts' teaching is that what she is sharing from is her experience. And we can't know for sure that everyone has the same experience as her. But what I hear her saying, she spent a lot of time in solitary, right, in contemplation, in meditation, and in fact, she was a cloistered nun, right, in seclusion, and she reached this unitive state. And when she reached this unitive state, then for her, there was no more purpose to being a cloistered nun. She couldn't go any farther there, right? She had to step into new challenges in order to go further. And for her, stepping into new challenges was leaving being a nun, becoming a secular person again, getting married, having children, those types of things. I happen to know that when she went into the world to live, she did still take retreats at times. She would go away and be secluded for weeks, or sometimes it's like one time she even went into the woods for like 6 months or something alone. She went to the church regularly, you know, in the afternoon alone when nobody else was around and prayed. So when she says that this inward journey no longer had a purpose for her, it's not like she abandoned the inward journey entirely. You know, there were still times when she was called to what we call go within and be still. But her life was not centered around that in the same way it was when she was a nun. She now had a worldly life. She had kids to raise. She had a husband and had all of the challenges that come with everyday life. So I don't know, those of us who have not had a life of being a nun in seclusion or a monk in seclusion, I don't know that we're going to notice the same dramatic change when we hit the unitive state, because we already have a life that is more centered in the world, most of us, right, than it is centered in inward. So I don't know that we'll notice the same dramatic change that she's speaking of. However, I think a part of what she's saying is really important. She's saying those world experiences remain of vital importance even after achieving the unitive state. And I think there are probably a lot of people, you know, like Buddha, Buddha, the way he achieved the unitive state was basically kind of being in seclusion. Ramana Maharshi, the way he achieved whatever state he achieved, he was in seclusion for a long time. Nisargadatta, we know Nisargadatta spent a long period of time he was never in complete seclusion, but he meditated, we think, many hours a day. And we know they all came to a point where we can't say they gave up the withinness. You know, like Ramana Maharshi still closed his eyes almost every morning, you know. But their life became more of a combination of that solely spiritual journey and being with people, right? Being with people. I mean, even though Ramana Maharshi was in an ashram where, people came to see him as the guru, he was still interacting with people. And if you read the stories, you know, the people were people. You know, so it seems like I read somewhere, and it may be in A Course in Miracles, but I can't say, but it seems like I read somewhere something to the idea of, it's one thing to achieve peace, you know, when you're all alone in a perfect setting. And it's another to be able to maintain that peace when you're out among your brothers. You might be able, you know, if you can get away from the world for a few years and really just go within and do nothing else in a very genuine way, you might be able to take a really huge step forward that's going to take you longer to take, possibly, if you're living both in the world and having an inward journey too. But at some point, from what she's saying, you can't really test that, which you have achieved in your alone time. You can't really test that and see what it really is and how solid it is with you until you get back out in the world with the other people. So these annoying sons of you-know-what are necessary to our awakening. You know? I told you guys that what Jazz and I are doing is trying to design a house, and neither one of us are architects. And one thing I've noticed several times today is I'm having fun. And the reason I've noticed that is because I know at an earlier time I probably would have got frustrated that I couldn't make it work the way I wanted it to. Right now it's like a puzzle that we haven't yet solved, no doubt about it. And I don't know that we will without hiring an architect. But the frustration of not being able to get it to do what I want it to do is not there. Right? It's just a puzzle that I continue to work on, and we continue to try and look at it in other ways. And Jasmine always has like puzzles, so it's not a big deal that she's gotten a little frustrated, to be honest. But she's not getting overly frustrated. She's having more fun than frustration, but that's not unusual for her. Remember, you know, she's an engineer. You know, she likes puzzles. The Regina personality has never liked puzzles. Never. I don't play crossword puzzles. I don't play Sudoku. I don't play, what else is there? I don't do that. You know, yeah. So, you know, so for the Regina personality to be working on a puzzle, and we've been working on it all day, like ever since, you know, shortly after the weekly gathering ended. For the Regina personality not to be getting upset at this puzzle that isn't resolving itself, that really says something about the peace, right? That I'm able just to sit with this and be with this and continue working on this and trying to look at it from a different way. And it's the same thing. For some people, you know, maybe money, you know, when they can finally be with money without getting frustrated, without getting fearful. For nearly everyone, if not everyone, being with other people without getting frustrated, without wanting to control, without wanting to change. You know, this is what being in the world is all about. This is how it serves us, so that our peace can become consistent. The other day I was talking to the people in the La Vida community, La Vida Awakening Together community. We're actually creating a community vision for those people who are moving there. And we're kind of deciding who we want to be as a community so that we're all in agreement on that. And some of the things that some of the people threw out, I perceived as protective. You know, for example, let me see if I can think of something or make up something. Well, one idea that was there is if anybody, you know, has a problem with me, they should have to come and talk to me. And I saw that as protective, like someone was trying to protect something. And there were a couple other things that were thrown out that were also very protective. You know, I'm trying to protect my boundaries. Other people should have to do this. And what I mentioned was, you know, it's not really helpful to have a community where you're trying to protect yourself from all of the things that might hurt. It's more helpful to have a community where we allow things to be as they are. And our focus is on, you know, if we are hurt, going within, finding out why and healing so that eventually we get to the point where everything can be as it is and we aren't hurt. Right, just nothing hurts us. We are the unaffected self. And that's really what she's talking about. That is the purpose of the world. That is the purpose of our community. It's to test the limits of our peace. So they're not helping us if they're all tiptoeing around us. They're helping us by just being themselves. She says, we must be clear, however, and again, she's talking about letting go of the practice, but like I said, I happen to know from reading her story that she did sometimes go and take even sometimes months off alone, so don't think that she just dropped this completely. You know, I'm sure she was following guidance, but the idea that she just dropped all practice completely would be a misunderstanding. Like I said, she did go to the church and pray and contemplate, but she was no longer, it was no longer her whole world like it was before. We must be clear, however, about what is meant by letting go of the raft of our former practices. Once we find the pearl of great price, the search is over. We no longer need the tools, maps, and other paraphernalia that have been helpful to the quest. Then she says, not all practices, of course, are a means to an end. Some practices are actually ends in themselves. And then she goes on to talk about a practice that she kept, which is one that none of us has, I don't think, which is the Eucharist, right? The Eucharist. That she was Catholic and the Eucharist was very important to her. And she says that was formerly a practice. But it was something that she, let me see what I'm trying to not read every word here. She goes, although much that was formerly a practice has become the permanent state of affairs. Okay, so that's a good way of looking at it. Before it was a practice, I practiced meditation. I practiced contemplation. I practiced, you know, forgiveness. And now I just contemplate when I feel called to contemplate. I meditate when I feel called to meditate. I'm naturally forgiving, right? So before it was a practice and now it's a state of affairs. So you could say it's been dropped as a practice and then some of this stuff stays as a way of life. That's a pretty good way of looking at it. She does say we no longer need silence and solitude to practice awareness of the divine. Because this is our everyday consciousness. It's not that we deliberately let go of our former practices. Rather, with the pearl in hand, digging automatically ceases. So I'm no longer going into meditation trying to realize the divine or the unity of self. I know the divine, the unity of self. It's with me all of the time. But sometimes, sure, I still feel called just to sit and close my eyes and just be there. But it's not a practice anymore. Right? That's the difference. So there's not seeking anymore. She says, between the beginning and the end of the unitive state, then, there is a long road to traverse, a road that few people realize is there. To get on this road, the choice is to fly or not to fly, to leave the raft behind or not to leave it behind. The piece of enlightenment on which this decision is based is what I call the critical turning point. So that's interesting. I think what I'm reading here, and we'll find out as I go forward, I think what we're saying is this: it's a critical turning point whether you just accept your new state and then go into the world from that perspective, or you keep clinging to your practices as if you have to go further. There's something else to achieve. Once the inward journey is over and a new life begins, several enlightening experiences occur, which, while they add nothing to the unitive state, nevertheless give insight into it. One of these is a glimpse beyond the unitive state to a final divine condition. So it's kind of interesting. We're saying nothing can be added to this condition that I'm in now. Therefore, I don't need the spiritual practices that brought me here. And yet at the same time, she's saying there is another condition, a final condition. But what she's saying is the practices that brought me here are not the practices that are going to take me to the next condition, which we call the final awakening. She's saying it's linked what I've achieved, living the awakening that I've already experienced, that's going to cause the next awakening to happen. When the unitive state is canceled like a candle melted in the sun, that is the final divine condition. From our present position, this final condition appears incompatible with continued earthly existence, impossible in fact. Because this experience is beyond the unitive state, the obvious conclusion is that the unitive state is transient, not eternal, and meant only for this life. At the same time, we learn that in the final condition, there is no sense of any self, not even unitive or God consciousness. The final state seems to be beyond all of this. And we know, of course, in Miracles talks about the real world as perception, true perception. And it talks about heaven or knowledge as being beyond perception entirely. So she seems, again, to be making the same distinguishing point. Permanent entrance into such a marvelous condition, and she's called it a marvelous condition. That's important for us to hear, right? Permanent entrance into such a marvelous condition, however, seems to be the ultimate death experience. There we go. Marvelous condition, ultimate death. Same sentence, right? Something else we need to hear. Permanent entrance into such a marvelous condition, however, seems to be the ultimate death experience. But since we do not seem to be destined to die right away, the question arises of how best to live and exercise the present unitive condition in the here and now. So it's interesting because she seems to teach that this final death is not something that you can make happen. And again, that's a pretty common teaching as well, right? A Course in Miracles says that God takes the last step. You can't make this final death happen. So what do you do between awakening to consciousness and dying to consciousness? You live, right? That's what you do. I mean, what else would you do? That's what you do. You live. And so what happens is you want to live your realization. Right? You live your realization. She says, there arises a great determination to live this human condition as fully as it was divinely intended to be. At the same time, the choice to live the unitive state to its fullest human capacity entails an element of sacrifice, which is the deliberate forfeiture of all beatific or heavenly experiences. There are several reasons why this deliberate forfeiture is required in order to get on with the unitive life. And I think that's probably a pretty good place for me to stop, because I don't think I want to start this next conversation right now. It's interesting because throughout the next several pages, I actually have written in the margins several question marks. So it'll be fun to revisit these question marks. But again, she is saying she considers a critical turning point whether we are willing to let go of the spiritual practices that have brought us here or not. And then she's also saying that the sacrifice in that, and again, this may not be true for everyone, but the sacrifice in that is that these spiritual practices brought these wonderful experiences. And so if you're letting go of the spiritual practices, you're letting go of the wonderful experiences too. Right? So if let's say that in meditation you had these incredible visions. Or here's one that's really interesting. This is something I kind of had to let go of. I used to be what we called a scribe. And as I would scribe, I would have visions. I would have incredible clarity. And I would experience the thrill of this incredible clarity coming through me that I knew was not of me. And of course, when I let go of scribing, and that's because I was completely guided to let go of scribing, that experience of having this Holy Spirit, which seemed not to be of me, speaking through me and the visions that came with it and all of that ended too. Because it was a part of the scribal experience. But I absolutely knew that I had to let go of the scribe. In fact, Inner Ramana was very clear with me that I couldn't, you could say, reach the unitive state as long as I remained the scribe in the way I was, because there was a me who did not know, who was asking of a Holy Spirit or an Inner Ramana who did know. How can you have, think about that, how can you have a unitive state if there's a me who's not clear asking a Holy Spirit who is clear for clarity? Right? That's clearly a state of separation. And so at some point, I was asked to give that up. And now, like when I write, for example, in my Seven Steps journal and stuff, there's still clarity, but the clarity does not feel like it's coming to me in that esoteric way that it did before. It's just me realizing things as I'm writing and writing them down. So the thrill of being the one that Holy Spirit communicated with had to be let go. And so I think she's talking about something similar, right? That her experiences that she had as a nun, they had to be let go as she stepped into the world and wanted to go forward. And I'm out of time, so I'm going to let go. Jasmine is waiting for me. I will be going back up to our puzzle. you guys have a wonderful evening and a Merry Christmas. Of course, I'll see many of you tomorrow for Gentle Healing, right? Yeah, I love you too. Mwah. Shauna just blew me a kiss and I felt it. It hit me right here. Mwah. All right. Bye.